This episode of the Griffey Boys is sponsored by Quick Feet. Quick Feet offers the simplest, most effective way to customize your skates, ensuring you're perfectly positioned for every pivot and turn when making plays. Simply slide one, two, or three Quick Feet inserts in your existing insoles, giving you more power and stability on ice. Whether you're competing at the highest level, skating as a hobby, or guiding others as a coach, Quick Feet will provide the ultimate enhancement for anyone looking to maximize their performance. Head over to quickfeet.com now to unlock a 10% discount with the promo code CurfewBoys10 and skate into a new era of on-ice performance. Elevate your game with Quick Feet, where every stride counts.
All right, Habs fans, hockey fans, welcome to a brand new episode of the Curfew Boys podcast. First line trio of myself, Sammy, centering Chris Solera on the left, and Alex Zook.
Zucker I got promoted the to right. The first line. Come on.
First, this is the first line trio.
What a week.
What a week indeed. How you boys doing?
I'm bad, man. Yourself?
I'm good.
I'm doing pretty good. Been watching some Larry David Curb Your Enthusiasm episodes of the new season, and it's fucking hilarious. Oh, so
I still didn't see the new season.
So I'm doing pretty good.
It's the final season, eh?
Like, the final season. It's the final season of Curb. It's sad, but
good for him though. What
Larry David's done it all. He's done it all. 100%. Rest in peace to Jerry Lewis, his best friend. God bless him, man. The guy was a good extra character on the show. He was complimentary character. God bless him. Do you guys have a good weekend? Have a good week. We're 1 week away. We're less than a week away from Easter Sunday, where I know Chris and I, we're gonna get our eating going. We're gonna be eating a shit ton of food, especially being from an Italian background. We're gonna be eating a lot. And I can't fucking wait. In the name of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, we dine for you, sir.
I seriously think that there's a possibility that our ancestors, maybe our family, fucking fed Jesus so much that's what killed him or brought him back to life. Brought him back to life.
No, it was. You know why? Because if they would have fed him, he would have fallen off the cross. He would have been so heavy and fat. That's why. If he would have eaten Italian style food, the Romans wouldn't have been able to lift him off the cross.
Anyway.
Exactly. Porco cane. What the fuck? Anyways, all right. So that's actually funny. Who knew we would have brought in comedy and religion into a hockey podcast?
Hey, listen.
This is freaking hilarious.
This is what you call freeform.
This is what we do. This is what jazz. The boys do. Yeah, I like
poultry in action.
Are we Zook, you're basically saying we're the jazz type of hockey podcast out there.
You can say that. Hey, listen, jazz. I'll take it. I'll take that description.
Dude, 100%. Jazz, if there's one thing I learned, being able to play drums, is if there's one thing I would have learned to do is how to play jazz drumming. Because that's like a whole other fucking technical level that I can't even comprehend.
Yeah. You watched the movie Whiplash too many times.
I love that. Haven't you? But that's different. That's not jazz. It is, but it's like big band jazz. It's different. It's not like
in mind when you said
it. It's not like the lounge, like the lounge type of jazz, like the smooth lounge bar jazz. Whip, and don't get me wrong, I fucking love that movie Whiplash. It was a fantastic movie. So, but even that style of drumming too, I wish I would have learned, but I just stick to the 4/4 beat, rock and roll, John Bonham, just beat the shit out of the drums. But anyways, boys, let's get into it. But before we do, reminder to all of our listeners that this episode is brought to you by Quick Feet. Quick Feet offers the simplest, most effective way to customize your skates, ensuring you're perfectly positioned every pivot and turn you make. simply slide one, two, or even three of these insoles in your existing insoles, giving you more power and stability on the ice, whether you're competing at a highest level, skating as a hobby, or trying to skate like Zook. I'm telling you, Quick Feet will provide the ultimate enhancement for anyone looking to maximize their performance. Head over to quickfeet.com. That's Q-U-U-I-K feet. Again, Q-U-U-I-K feet.com. And now to unlock a 10% discount with our promo code CurfewBoys10. Skate into a new era of on-ice performance and elevate your game with Quick Feet. And once again, I keep using these insoles to play hockey. I played last night and got to say, I'm loving this product every single
time. So explain to me how, because like you said earlier, I'm not a great skater. So how does it really enhance your skating? In what ways?
Because if you look at a skate, the boot, yeah, like the toes are slanted a bit downwards.
They're declining.
So, so when you use the soles, you kind of bring your toes up to a bit of like almost
more of a balance feeling.
Exactly. Yeah. So it gives you more of a that edge when you push and all that. And there's different ways. If you go to their website, they tell you how to check out if you need to insert one, two, or three insoles. Nice. It's really, really, really well done. There's in the package here, it explains how to go about it. And Alex and the guys at Quick Feet, they really they've done a great job with this product. So, yeah,
you really have, because Sammy keeps forgetting to share.
God knows
how many packs he's been through at this point in time.
I've only stuck with one. I got the rest. I'm seeing you on Sunday. Shut up! You're gonna get it. I'm gonna slide it in your fucking.
I'm trying to prove a testament back to religion. We want to show how good it is. You're keeping them. You're using them. That's what counts. They're amazing.
I'll slide them under your plate of lasagna, and you'll get them right there. Okay, on Sunday.
If we're in the spirit, they're gonna be eaten. But
no, you don't want to
eat everything that they put in front of us. We just destroy, devour.
Anyways, no, you don't want to eat any insoles, but boys, let's get started with our lovely Montreal Canadiens, coming off a 2-game winning streak, ending the West Coast road trip, and there's nothing but positives going on, eh? Like, yeah. do we see any negativity right now surrounding this team? I honestly cannot find a single negative thing as a whole to talk about with this team. I really, really, I can't say anything negative about this team right now as a whole.
Even Marty said it in his first interview back. He's like, he was watching the team from his TV and he was happy to see what he was watching, you know, the stuff he was seeing on the ice. He was happy to see how the players were buying into the whole philosophy that he's trying to instill.
Yeah, he was in touch with Letowski. And
even though they didn't win a lot of games when he was away, the spirit was still there.
Yep.
The fight was still there.
And well, yeah.
To me, a positive thing, because it's like, remember when coaches were changed in the Habs in the past during the, you know, like midseason or in the playoffs or with Dominique Ducharme and all that stuff? Like, you saw there was a difference of vibe in the team and play style and whatnot. That could be a good thing or a bad thing, depending how you're looking at it.
Well, you think Luke Richardson, when he took over versus Vegas, they played a bit different?
I was just about to say, when Luke Richards took over, they played some of their best hockey. That's when they dominated and beat Vegas.
I found as if it was like a weight was lifted off their shoulders, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they did say we
feel as though we're ready to go through a wall for Luque Richardson. I never heard that once about Dominique Ducharme.
But that's a series that also
their head through a wall and not come through.
But the problem with that's not that there was a problem, but on a physical level, that series ended up destroying them, like physically. I think that's where guys got hurt. It was during that series, and they battled it out. They're like the toughest guys on the planet, but it was that series that really hurt them physically, and then they weren't able to keep up with Tampa. But all that, let's go back. First of all, super happy that everything's okay with Marty and his son, and he revealed about his son got hurt during a game, and then there were more complications later on, and that's why he was hospitalized. But he's okay, he's recovering, he's at home. So just on the overall, like, super happy to hear that Marty's back.
It was a collision or something, eh?
I honestly I just listened to what Marty said when he released. He released a statement. I don't know if it was something to the head, anywhere else on the upper body, lower body. Honestly, at this point, don't know. My opinion, don't care. As long as the kid's fine, his family's fine. But Martin McGuire posted or reported that he surprised the guys at the hotel before the Colorado game. I think at 24 hours before. Like when he came back, when he said he's back, I think before he announced it, he surprised everyone at the hotel. And at the hotel lobby, and as guys were coming in, like he was like they were all surprised. They were hugging him, and apparently there was like, I don't know Kent if it was Hughes.
It was Kent Hughes. He was the number one, heartfelt hug. And,
was it Hughes or was it somebody hugged Kent him Hughes. And it looked like it was I don't know why I have Caden Gooley in mind.
What a management though. Fuck, what a difference.
Okay, but do we
so nice to see.
I don't think, or maybe we do understand finally, like there's such a bond with this team, but like at all levels here, like not just within the players and the coaching staff and, or at least with Marty specifically, but it feels like with everybody, there's a whole, like as this rebuild keeps going, the more and more we keep finding out how close not just this team, the organization is. And if Chris, if you're there's a very good chance you're right. If it is Kent Hughes that had like that hugged the guy for like quite a few minutes and maybe got emotional here and there, like there's a strong bond going on with this team, and other teams better be fearful of it. I'm serious. I'm not messing around. Like, this is going to be dangerous for other teams, for us, we're probably witnessing. Hopefully, I know Anthony uses the word dynasty. I'm not going to go that far as a dynasty, but there's really a winning culture that other franchises finally got to go to the Stanley Cup, and I think now more than ever, we're really starting to see, without the key pieces coming in, the young players that we're going to mention later in this episode, there's something fucking brewing here, and it's...
That's what I said last episode. Like, that's exactly, for the first time in a while, just the talent in the pipeline, the development that's going on with the top players, the contribution from the supporting players, even if we take, we're obviously going to get to talk about Alex Newhook, but Alex Newhook, had he been healthy, that's a guy who's putting in 20 to 25 goals. That's an amazing pickup.
1,000%.
Just to stick with the whole culture thing, and when you said other teams have to be worried, I think the first thing that came to mind was sleep and fear, rest of the NHL. But in all honesty, it's the first time. We grew up hearing there were cliques in the locker room. There was the Koivu and even Kovalev sometimes division. I don't want to go there. I don't want to make accusations that it was too young to probably even understand.
There could have been even the Pacioretty and Subban clique division too.
There you go. I think for the first time, like, not only do we have a lot more skill, the young guys are really developing. We're going to get into the weekend of Montreal Canadian prospect dominance in a little bit, but all the pieces are in place and that culture is clearly coming together through and through and through. And even though we're one of the bottom teams, like you said it again last episode, there are so many positive things to take out of what's happening. And there's truly only good things. And I feel for the first time, in all of my fandom, and not counting the time that we went to the finals, there was obviously hope, but I legitimately think not only do we have the opportunity to be battling for the cup in the next 3 to 4 years, I think it's going to be 3 to 4 years back to back to back that we could be battling for the cup, as long as we play the cards right, as long as contracts are not overwhelmingly bad. Everything is falling. Culture, talent, development, and just that overall bond. I think we're seeing, like, in all honesty, we keep kissing Boston's ass for what they established. But when Patrice Bergeron and Zdeno Chara was still there, what they established from 2011 all the way to fucking 2020. They were goddamn dominant, and they were a group. That's the last point. They were a group that pushed one another so freaking hard.
They held each other accountable
so much.
They held each other accountable on that team. And so does Jim Montgomery, and I feel like Marty has that same coaching style too. I think.
Yeah.
I really want to lead, Chris, everything you said, fantastic. And I want to add in, I think in terms of the players, I think that's why Nick Suzuki is the captain, because of that. And I think he learned that from the playoff run with Price,
Shea Weber,
Corey Perry, throw in Eric Staal in there. Throw in Joel Edmondson in there if you want. Even if you want Jeff Petrie, maybe a Philip Dan, like
Ben Sherratt.
What I mean? But Cole Caulfield was there too. But I think Nick Suzuki, because he was there before Cole, I think it starts with him. And I know, Chris, we mentioned him last time you and I spoke, but we have to talk about Nick Suzuki. Guy just fucking he just attained a new record,
career high in points.
He's a career high in goals, a career high in points. He's going to be that point per player guy. He's going to be that
point per player guy, point per game player.
Let me repeat that. He's going to be that point per game player guy.
There you go.
Thank you. Sorry.
Good job.
But I'm serious. Add in the fact that he's learned from a guy like Sean Monahan last season and this season, it starts with him. And it's propagating. I think it's propagating to the key pieces. Obviously, to Cole Caulfield. Definitely to Juraj Slafkovský, who we're going to get to later. And I think on defense as well. But on defense, like Gouley, Jacki, Schrubel, Harris, they have Savard and Matheson to look at as well. You combine all of that together and you mix it up together, there's something good brewing here with this team.
Zoop deserves the chance to say it, but I just want to slip in, because you slipped in the Nick Suzuki point, I am so happy, so happy that Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield's contracts are going to be the basis of all future contracts for this team. I think we can be competitive with that alone. And if you have a point per game player making that money, it's going to be very hard for other players to come in from the outside and demand much more. So I'll leave it at that, and I'll hand it off to Zook because I've spoken enough.
No, yeah, you both said all. I remember hearing this from Gouley. I remember when, I think it was his first season playing with the Canadians full time, if you will, he said something in an interview where it was something in a line to like, we're trying to build something special here. Mm-hmm. And he was alluding to all the kids coming up, surprising, you know, people making the roster sooner than later, all that kind of vibe. It's a couple of years, right? Mm-hmm. When he said that they're trying to build something special, it's like you really felt something starting to happen.
Yep.
Chemistry growing, all that kind of stuff. And that's what we're seeing right now. It's as simple as you guys said it before, rebuilding the right way. That's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're going to be, it might take longer than we would want. We all want to win next year, but let's be realistic.
Yeah.
If you want to do it right, if you want to be a good team for 5 to 10 years coming, it might take 3 to 4 years to do that, you know. But
what a game Caden Gouley had against Seattle. Fucking yeah, 3 points.
Yeah, he's had an up and down season, but that's normal for young kids.
He's playing on his off wing or his off hand. Like he's a lefty, but he's playing on the right. And
man,
can you imagine being a young defenseman who's playing on his off hand against the top line of the other team playing over 20 minutes.
It's insane.
And not looking out of place.
Yep.
Like, unfucking real. Caden Gouley is unreal. And he's still learning. Absolutely. Is he perfect? No, not yet, anyways. But Jesus Christ, like, this kid is fantastic. He's fantastic. I love him. I absolutely love him. He's untouchable. Like, who said he's untouchable? I think Pierre Maguire. Yeah.
Jerry Maguire on the.
He is untouchable. You cannot touch this kid. Him too. I'm curious to see what his contract's going to be. But Chris, like you said, if the contracts of Gouli, of Suzuki and Cole are kind of like the basis, I could see him getting maybe the same, like maybe six. If he gets 6-7 million, I could see that.
I would do 6.5.
Mm-hmm. For 8 years. 6.5 for 8 years. 6.5 of the average.
If Kaden Gouli, I'll say it like this: I agree with Zouk. I would give that in a heartbeat, no hesitation. I think if there's somebody that has to hesitate on that contract, that's Kaden Gouli himself, because I think he's going to be severely underpaid at one moment in time or another. He's going to be severely underpaid. But there's one thing, and I don't want to bring the conversation backwards, but it's really going to pertain. And Kaden Gouli might be the factor to see what we can expect contract wise for a lot of other players. So I'll start with when you said we're trying to build something special. I think for the first time that you actually have not only guys that are just genuinely good human beings, they're not necessarily gym rats, but they're students of the game. They really genuinely look invested, and they actually look like they truly want to, again, build off of one another. So I think like the off-ice problems are one thing, but the reason why I went back to this and I wanted to, you know, rather than move on to the next topic, we've spent years looking at, especially I think like the Tampa Bay Lightning, and again, another one are the Boston Bruins, and I don't want to go there, but even like the Toronto Maple Leafs when you had Nick Foligno, Jason Spezza, that's a whole other level of signing dirt cheap contracts, but I feel really Tampa Bay Lightning was probably the number one in doing this. A lot of really good players sign for a lot less than what they're worth. I understand that the taxes are different, but my God, if we have a handful of players, again, who are just going to follow along and fall in line with the Suzuki contract, we're going to be able to have like 7, 8, 9 players potentially that are really high caliber players, not superstar players, but star players with really reasonable contracts as the salary cap is going up. And really, it's just going to be a dominant force for years where they could just add on and change up any player that either gets greedy if there's another opportunity that comes up in that, like there's a great free agent that wants to come and sign in Montreal. It's truly what Sammy said. A lot of other teams have to be very scared and mindful about what the Montreal Canadiens organization is going to be in a few years. It's going to be the place to be.
I don't buy this shit anymore that players don't want to come to Montreal. I don't buy that. I think a lot of players do. It's just it's circumstantial, or there's some circumstances in their life where it's like I can't make that transition. So I'd rather go to
family and things.
Exactly. So I'd rather go to another team that's closer to my home and all that. Yeah. There's some players that want to play for a big market. There's like, it can't be that players don't want to come to Montreal, yet every fucking year the Bell Center is voted the best arena to play in. Like it come on. Like I get taxes, weather, and all that. No, there's a lot more to it than just that. Okay. It's just there's just some players they just can't. Number one. Number two, all the best players out there, they're already signed long term with their teams already. So it's not that they don't want to come here. Unless a fucking trade goes down, they're not going to. The best players in prime age won't come to Montreal because they're already signed. Okay? So we need to remember that as well. But I'm telling you, if this culture keeps going, people see how Marty treats his players. People see how Kent Hughes treats his players. People see how everybody treats each other. And you convince a pretty good player, whether he's somebody of the past, and, you know, changing his role. But if he knows and he's told, listen, you're the perfect guy to play this role, what we need to take our team to the next level, and that's bringing the cup back to Montreal, the players will sign. The players will fucking sign. It's just Crosby. A matter of...
Good. Zoop, you got it. You read my mind.
Oh, man. Ah, you know what? In all honesty, if we were a playoff... I want, believe me, I think like, I want it more than jizzed, anybody else.
Like the word jizz is beyond.
Dude, I want to jizz about the thought of Crosby playing for the Montreal Canadiens more than anybody in this city, more than anybody within this fan base. I just think where the Canadiens are right now in the rebuild and where Crosby is in his career, man, if we were a year or two ahead of where the plan is, then yes, I would see Crosby come. If we were a team that was able to make the playoffs, because I see that happening in 2 years from now. If we were fast forward 2 years from now, but Crosby was still in the same situation, then yes, I could probably see that happen. But right now, as of this very moment, I'm not sure. I'm not too sure.
As of this moment, maybe not, but it's very likely that Crosby is going to sign a contract extension in Pittsburgh. But even if that's, let's say, another three.
I don't think so, dude. Dude, I think Kyle Dubas is ready.
You do not think. The number of seats in the arena is the last two numbers for the number of seats in the arena in Pittsburgh is 87, specifically for Crosby. Like, they built the whole franchise around it, around him. The only way I see this happening is you're saying we're 2 years ahead. I understand. But I still think that it could be something like a Raymond Bourque type Boston, Colorado. The last push when the Montreal Canadiens are there, Pittsburgh is going to say, look, Sid, it's time to move on. Are you going to retire? Maybe you'll play one more year, but we're not going to get much more for you than we will now. I do think at that moment in time, there is a possibility that Crosby comes on. And Crosby is not going to be Crosby. We have to think of him more as like a much better Eric Staal or Corey Perry. But nevertheless, I could see Crosby coming in and playing that role at that point in time. But the difference with Crosby versus any of those players is that guy, and my God, I'm opening up a whole other can of worms here, but I genuinely think Sidney Crosby is the best hockey player to ever play all time, all around. Mm-hmm. This guy, it's whatever he's played, wherever he's played, at any single level, he has won. This guy just makes shit happen and he wins. He doesn't win every year, but again, you take Olympics, NHL. He didn't play in the AHL because he jumped right into the league. But every single competition that he's played in, he can take your team mentally and I think emotionally just to another level. So I will not stop fantasizing about having a guy, especially that guy, come to Montreal.
Kyle Dubas is not going to trade Crosby to Montreal next year. Crosby has 1 year left on his contract.
Not next year. Next year. Crosby's not going to come here on a multi-year. The expiration of his contract, whenever that may be. I still think there's an extension, though, in between time.
I don't know. I just think Kyle Dubas is going to pull the plug on this team and start a rebuild. Like, he's already getting rid of Gensel. He's gotten rid of a few pieces. I think he's going to get rid of Malkin. I think he's going to get rid of Letang. If you keep Crosby, maybe. I'm here to interrupt. The Laval Rocket just scored and got a 1-0 lead over Utica.
Who scored?
I will look right now. I don't know if it's
Bissot.
I'm not sure exactly. Sorry, Chris, not to cut you off. Is that Mayu or is it finally fucking Jacob Perreault? I think it is. I think Jacob Perreault finally fucking scored. All right, cool. Good for you, kid. I don't know, it took you a long time, but it's okay. Next year is going to be the big next year in the NHL. The big question is going to be what's going to happen with Sidney Crosby at the end of his contract.
Look, right now he has 76 points in 71 games. 36-year-old.
Yeah.
Insane.
He's the best player ever.
He's above a point a game still.
He's the best player. Makes sense. But all that to say is,
I'd sign him.
I don't know. Of course, I would sign him in a heartbeat. Even at the age of 39, I would sign him. Yeah. I'm not sure, but anyways, Juraj Slafkovský. What can we say about him? Like right now, on March, we're recording on March 27th. This episode's gonna air on March 28th. The Curfew Boys put out a post on Instagram. If you could describe Juraj Slafkovský's season so far in one word, what would it be,
Chris?
Progress. or development.
Okay. Interesting. You can't use the word jizz.
I know. I was waiting for that to be said. I'm going to say the word confidence.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, you know what? In all honesty, expected. I expected him to fucking play like this. Or at least I expected him to improve.
Like, after what we saw last summer of him training and how he was training and what he did to train, that's what you're saying, right? You expected this to happen.
If I could put in one word, to be expected. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one word.
That's yeah. Or you know what? Here, I'll use, in the words of Carey Price, believable.
Hold on, Sam. I have to ask you because I hear what you're saying off ice, what we saw in the summer, his training, so on and so forth. But another word that I would use to describe it, and it goes, it's kind of a contrast to what you're saying. It's not a contrast, but it is a contrast. It's a turnaround. Like, at the beginning of the season, as much as he did his training and everything, let's be honest amongst us three, like, it really didn't look good at the beginning of the year. Like, it really looked bad. Like, please. I know we are very much in control of our emotions. We're very much capable of saying he's an 18, 19-year-old kid. There's a lot of growth to be had. My God. Don't tell me when we saw Logan Cooley scoring those crazy goals in the preseason. Don't tell me when we saw how some of the other players and how he was fumbling, not skating, still getting hit. Like, I think every single one of us had a worry. And when you say expected, like, I understand expected now. Like, he ended up reaching those expectations. But my God, turnaround is another word to describe it, because holy crap, it was scary at the beginning of the season.
Well, you know what he needed? He needed more than 82 games. And he didn't play 82 games last season. If he played 82 games, if he didn't get hurt, if he didn't get a season-ending injury, I think he would have started the season a lot better than what he did. I'm convinced that. He needed more games. He needed more games under his belt.
Because you got to remember, Chris and Sam, Logan Cooley was already playing in North America. Slafkovský wasn't.
Yeah.
So he had to adapt. And I think his adapting took longer than we would have liked it, say. But that was also partly due to the fact that he was injured.
Yeah, exactly. When you're injured and you only played, how many games did he play? He played 39.
Yeah.
He didn't even play half a season. He played 39 games.
The first month of the season, Chris is right. It's not as if he was sluggish, but he was still...
He was fucking rusty.
A millisect behind the play, I'd say.
I think
he was rusty. The second his confidence got up there and Marty gave him confidence...
On the top
side. Started with Marty, by the way.
Yeah.
Even the way Marty was speaking about him, saying, you know, he's progressing in all facets of his game and all that kind of stuff, and that it's going to, soon enough, ça va débloquer, is what he was saying, remember?
Yeah.
And once he started, it just kept on pouring, and every game he's getting, he's been our best player consistently, I would say, for the last 2 months.
On a,
on the visual, on the ice, dude, he's been... 100%.
I think so too.
Defensively too, I find.
I think Nick Suzuki has entered the chat, but Slafkovský is right there with him.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I think in terms of the forward group, them on the offensive side, on the defensive side, I got to give it to Jake Evans and Yoel Armia. Like, Armia, I don't know.
Whoa.
I don't know.
Say Armia had the biggest change from the beginning of the season. Dude, he was sent to Laval.
The biggest change, probably
when he came back.
I think that could be a fair statement. Yes, in terms of players that had some kind of revelation. Yoel Armia is definitely one of them. I think Yoel Armia more than Jake Evans, but Jake Evans has to be in the conversation because once Dvorak was out, and then once Monahan got traded,
I forgot about Dvorak.
I think his role as a centerman. Grew significantly, and the responsibilities he had now at both ends of the ice were even more than what he was probably used to. that him on the penalty kill, him and Armia right now are fantastic. They've turned it around. Like, and they deserve a shit ton of credit. Like, dude, look what they did with against Colorado. Against Colorado, that you're able to shut down Colorado's offense. And that Jonathan Drouin suddenly exploding. You know what I mean? Like, it's against Colorado, dude. They're like one of the best teams in the league. You know, they shut them down. They played well against they didn't play bad against Edmonton. They didn't play bad against Vancouver. Against those teams, I thought they were going to get a spanking, and they kept up with them. The only off game was one against Calgary, okay? Like, but that's it. The others, they didn't look out of place. And that's so encouraging to see. It's so encouraging to see, especially like at this time of the year, because I think this is a stepping stone of how they're going to approach next season. And next season, it's just if they could keep playing the way they're playing, it's good for their confidence when they start next season. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
So perfectly in agreement.
Okay. Well,
in unison.
You know what? Actually, Chris, a player I want to talk about too. We don't really get to talk, but Alex Newhook, like, what would have been if he never got hurt, if he wasn't out for eight weeks?
Okay. So I'm curious, like, every single game, obviously, as much as I'm watching the game, I'm still tracking, like, I'm always opening up the Montreal Canadiens application, just checking what the points are looking like, how close Suzuki is to having a point. Per game, honestly, I just do it, I think, because it's refreshing to actually have a player who's producing for once, for the first time in God knows how many years. But in opening up the application and setting the team line in terms of goals, Newhook's at 12 goals. He's fourth in scoring with 44 games. Suzuki's got 29, but that's 71 games. Like the goals per game ratio for Alex Newhook, he's, honest to God, he's a 20 to 25 goal scorer, which is a huge addition. We expected him to score like 15, maybe around the 15 to 20 mark. This is well over 20 that he would be on pace for. Yep. I don't know an overwhelming amount about the guy because he's so young. There's not much of like a track record that you can go and base and say, dude, he's always injured or he's always healthy.
His college numbers, man. His college numbers are really good in Boston College. We're going to talk about Boston College later, man. I'm telling you, but he's come.
Alex Newhook stays healthy. He's going to be a pivotal player. The only thing that maybe fans are going to disagree with, you guys are going to disagree with, I'm not 100%. He's good enough to be on a second line and get that amount of time.
Dude.
But I think he's going to be like a superb third liner, like top tier, one of the best third liners in the league when the team is really ready to compete.
You wouldn't put him on a second line with Kirby Dach on the left wing?
I would absolutely. I'm not saying that he's not a second liner. I do think that he is a second liner. I'm just saying I don't know. I've just got this hope that we're going to have another super offensive player to play with Kirby Dach. But no matter what, under any circumstances, whether he's playing second or third line, I think Alex Newhook not only has his place on the team, but he's going to be a pivotal element that's really going to help us go as far as we dream we can go.
His career high is 14 goals last season with Colorado in 82 games. This year he has 12 in 44, like you said. He's two goals away from tying.
And without Dach. Imagine with a healthy Dach.
And as a
center, you would have been 25 goals.
As a centerman with a few times with Joshua Roy, a few times with Yoel Armia, like not exactly has, he doesn't have top six.
Imagine
guys.
A Kirby Dach, dude. There he's hitting 20, 25 goals, dude.
I think he's hitting 20, 25 easily. It helps him being on the power play helps too. Those two goals against Seattle.
He's such a perfect skater though, eh? Like
fantastic skater, and I think that's what a guy on the wing, a guy like Kirby Dach, that's what he needs.
Yeah,
I think I truly think that Marty has to try those two next season.
I'm not in disagreement. I just want to be perfectly clear with you guys.
I like you bring up the question where you still think they need to have some kind of top player, for lack of a better term, a top six player to play with Kirby Doc.
I think, in all honesty, it depends on this draft.
It's going to depend on this draft. If they draft that player or if they trade for that player. That's how I see it. I truly don't think Kent Hughes traded for Alex Newhook the way he did just to see Alex Newhook be a top nine instead of a top six. I can't see it. I really can't. I can't see him being a third line center when once the Christian Dvorak is gone, Owen Beck is going to take that spot. Then he's having a fantastic season in the OHL. And he's entering his playoff mode. Then after that, he's going to Laval next year. So you give Owen Beck that full year to develop in Laval while Christian Dvorak takes the third line center role, pending that Kirby Doc stays healthy. Do you see the timeline of this thing going on?
100%. And that's why I said it last episode. In 3 years, I think the Montreal Canadiens are going to be a fucking scary team and competing, like truly competing. Everybody's got a lot of these teams in their mind. Like, who are, I'm asking you both, who are your Stanley Cup, not contestants, Jesus. Who are your Stanley Cup, les prétendants, Jesus, I'm thinking in French. Who are the most lethal teams this year? Like, there's no way that Boston is going to be able to keep this up. There's no way that Toronto is going to be able to keep this up. There's no way that Tampa is going to be able to keep this up. Florida Panthers are going to come apart. Vegas, I don't know how the hell they're going to maneuver around the cap. Toronto Maple Leafs, done. All the teams that are really dominating at the top of the league, like, I don't know how they're going to do it cap-wise. They're going to have to kind of blow up, like, the only thing is the Chicago Blackhawks, they did perfectly fine. But when Andrew Ladd, Dustin Byfuglien, Brian Campbell, and everything,
they had them signed perfectly because they knew that those guys were all free agents and they were going to man the race, and Chicago couldn't afford it.
But Tampa, Boston, Toronto, to a certain degree, Florida, they have some of the worst prospects in their prospect. Well, let's even throw Carolina. Carolina's okay. I think they're better off than those three teams that were mentioned.
Yeah,
but
Carolina's good,
like,
man.
Montreal, like, please, let's be honest with ourselves. The ones who are truly up and coming, but I still don't think that that's the difference. If you take Anaheim Ducks, I don't think the Anaheim Ducks have the core to take on Nick Suzuki, Caulfield, Doc, Slavkovsky. I really don't think they have a crazy amount of prospects, but I genuinely don't think they're there. You take the Detroit Red Wings, who are another team.
I don't know about
Anaheim.
You take
the Ottawa Senators.
I'm not saying that they...
Well, it was the first team that I mentioned for a reason. Anaheim has some of the best prospects.
Yeah,
but I'm talking about winning culture with talent, with toughness, with discipline.
Who knows?
I don't think the Montreal Canadiens are going to be touched.
I don't know, man. Okay, hold on a sec. Anaheim Ducks in the future, like, listen, I don't think they're going to get rid of Trevor Zegras like everybody thinks they will. You have him, you have Leo Carlson, you have Mason McTavish, and you have Cutter Gauthier coming up. Chris, that's fucking solid. I named them for a reason. They're going to be the next. So you know how the Toronto Maple Leafs kind of built their team around Matthews, Marner,
Nylander, Riley.
I think Anaheim is going to be kind of like that, except they're probably going to have to be careful with how they distribute those contracts and not have five players control more than 50% of the fucking salary cap in the team. So we'll see.
But that's why I'm saying the much, and I can't emphasize, I don't feel like I have the capacity to express myself in properly to say that, like, do you not notice the stars are aligning, like, down to the amount of money that they're going to be asking for their contracts, to the way that they approach the game, to the culture within the locker room, to the balance of talent and certain toughness, to, like, all the distribution of talent not only being up top but also on defense. And I think now's the time to maybe transition into the weekend of Montreal Canadiens glory prospects. We have one of the top tier goaltenders. We have all positions, all, like, everything is just falling in line.
We still need that top six forward.
We do.
One more. And I think Hughes and Gorton are going to either draft him this year or they're going to trade for him this year. I really, really think so. You want to talk about, I'm ready to talk about it, but like, what a fucking weekend Habs Nation got to see on Friday, on Saturday, and on Sunday. I don't even know who to begin with. I don't know if we should begin with the Laval Rocket, with the arrival of David Reinbacher. I don't know whether to begin with Jacob Fowler and just being like, yeah, I'm the next Dominic Hasek, just American style. I don't know if we talk about Lane Hudson, and who just likes to, he thinks he could toe drag everyone and snipe it in the net on a power play. I don't know where to begin about Hudson versus Fowler. I don't know where to begin about Logan Mailloux sniping a game winner in overtime, and how the Laval Rocket fucking three games in 3 days, and they won all three. Yeah. Fuck it. We're on the top.
Okay, it's Reinbacher.
All right, Zook, perfect. you just got the topic started. I don't think it's a coincidence that Laval won three games and three nights right after David Reinbacher shows up. I don't think it's a coincidence. I really think this team saw someone within the organization that's drafted top five, obviously, and probably brought some kind of new life, probably brought some kind of extra reason to fight, because right now Laval is playing for their playoff lives and they only have 9 games remaining, including the one that is being played at right now against three teams that they're trying to catch up to, the Belleville Senators and the Toronto Marlies. Listen, the way that David Reinbacher, the first game, we saw the highlights. Everyone saw the highlights. I did not expect a fucking Bobby Orr toe drag deke and snipe it to tie the game with less than 3-4 minutes left. Like, that, I don't think we realize how much even that lit a fire under their fucking asses for the Laval Rocket. I think, you know, we talk about team culture and winning culture amongst the Canadians. I also think it propagates to the Laval Rockets, where there's no egos. I don't think there's any egos on this team, because let's be honest, depends the team, depends the players. When you're 24, 25, 26, and you haven't made the NHL yet, you see a young kid, 18, 19 years old, coming from Europe, knowing that he's going to get a chance one day. Sometimes the jealousy kicks in. Sometimes like, fuck, I gotta shit. Now my spot is, there's a lot more competition for my spot. I really need to wake up or something. I don't think there's any of that with this whole franchise, this organization. And you saw it. You saw it with the Laval Rocket. They played for one another this past weekend. Three games in three nights. David Reinbacher played three games in a month in fucking Europe. Kid comes here, plays three games in three nights. No problem.
What a development.
No problem.
Aid. It's going to be this. Oh, fuck.
No problem. Dude. I'll fucking toe drag you. I'll snipe it.
Skating, though, man. His skating ability is fantastic as well, too. He was not out of place.
His positioning is so far. Dude. I don't want to use the word perfect, but, dude, it's like, okay, he's been playing in North America all Sam, season.
When you saw Gouley playing Laval the first time.
Who?
Gouley.
Gouley never played in Laval.
He never went to Laval, so he went straight from the OHL?
From the OHL straight to the NHL, yeah.
I thought he did a stint at Laval. No.
Sure? No. Oh, dude, I'm 1,000% positive.
I saw him. Like,
I saw Mailloux. I saw Mailloux. I saw Jack Eye.
Okay. Who else? Yeah, so then it must have been Mailloux then. That I want to give you.
Okay, well, hold on reference. A second. Hold on. Gouley did play three games in Laval during the COVID season.
Okay. That's what I was talking
about. Okay, sorry.
I'm sure I remember seeing his name in Laval once, yeah.
But this is when there were no fans in the arena. And yes.
Okay. Did you see the way he was, let's say, inserted in the team and how he was playing versus how Reinbacher? Do you see who was better, let's say?
I think there's similarities.
Okay, there are similarities.
But I think Gouli has a bit more of that aggressive side to his game compared to linebacker. But in terms of not looking out of place, in terms of proper positioning, defensively,
that's what I mean.
Defensively,
yeah.
Very similar. David Reinbacher, so far, what I've seen, he's made one little turnover in game two, and I think another turnover in game three. Just whatever. It's gonna happen. He's a rookie in this league, but his first pass out of the zone is perfect. His poise, though. It's the poise. It's being able to be calm under pressured situations in his own zone.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to make it next year?
Ooh, that's a fucking
good question. If so, who would, what place is going to, what place will he be taking, or whose place?
Well, I honestly think Justin Barron's position just got threatened a little bit by.
How about Kovacevic?
Maybe Kovacevic. If anything, dude, is Mayu gonna make it? Well, who has a better chance of making it next year, Mayu or Reinbacher? I'm answering a question with a question, but I don't know. This is fucking.
I think Mayu. I think Montreal Canadiens are gonna do it properly. There's one thing too. You can look at it as though Mayu is going to stay down another year and he's going to dominate another year. But Logan Mayu was already an AHL All-Star. Mm-hmm. He already set the record for goals by a defenseman.
As a rookie.
He's exactly that. They might say, look, we just want you to continue playing as much as you are. Like, I think there's two angles. Just continue. Like, continue to dominate. Your time is coming. It's a question of time. We're going to be respectful towards the veterans on the Montreal Canadiens players, on the Montreal Canadiens team. But the second that one of these players is out of the picture, traded, injured, you're our guy. But in between time, we value it a lot more that you're in development and you're on the ice for 25 to 30 minutes a game. However, if for some reason David Savard goes in the offseason, if I'm not going to say Jonathan Kovacevic, because Jonathan Kovacevic is again a seventh defenseman in my mind, sixth or seventh defenseman.
Yep.
I think if I were to make a legitimate prediction with regard to this, it's going to be the second that David Savard is gone, because I think Logan Mayu is only going to come in when he's going to be a second pairing defenseman or even first pairing defenseman, not before, not after, because his development is way too precious. And same thing for Reinbacher. Like, I think it's even more important that Reinbacher has a full year development in the AHL before it's even a question. But out of the two, Mayu by a long shot, because he's already had this 1 year and because he's dominated as much as he has. But out of respect for the players that are here, and the positioning that they're going to be in, I don't think either of those guys come up from Laval to Montreal before trade deadline 2025. Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Let me add one more element to you. I think it's without a doubt happening that Lane Hudson's going to sign with the Canadiens at the end of his NCAA season. So do you take a full year to have David Reinbacher and Lane Hudson develop together as a pairing in the minors next year?
If he does sign, yes, absolutely. Because if you remember last camp, remember the chemistry that they had?
Dude, they were fantastic.
Build it now. Build it professionally for a fucking whole season, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. If you want to build your team right, you do that.
I think that could be a smart move.
Yeah,
but we've always talked about this, but then do you guys foresee maybe the defensive pairings of the Canadiens in the years to come to be different? Because in my mind, it's always been maybe
after next year,
Gouli and Reinbacher. Are you guys recommending that it be in the long run more Hudson and Reinbacher and Gouli and Mayu and Jack Eye and who?
Hold on a sec. Right now,
Jack Eye and Mayu were great together.
I don't see the lineup change. But Chris, you said you really foresee Mayu coming up once Savard is gone. Right now, Jack Eye is playing with Savard, and I force until Savard is gone, I see that pairing staying together next year. I see Matheson Gouley staying together next year. Then I also see, again, maybe Jaden Struble with Kovacevic and Harris. I don't know if Harris will get traded. Out of the defensemen, I personally think maybe Justin Barron's time is up. He's an RFA at the end of the year. Maybe they trade him. Maybe they trade him in the offseason or before draft day. That's what I see. That's what I see going on. And within that time, unless Lane Hudson and David Reinbacher have an unbelievable training camp where it's like there's no doubt.
It's possible.
It is possible, but until that happens, I really see them staying in the minors for one more full year. And if Mayu doesn't make the team, he's the next call up. I 1000% I see him being the very first call up on defense if ever there's an injury, whether it's on the left side or on the right. No matter who's injured and they need seven defensemen, Logan Mayu is going to be the first one called up.
Agreed.
Fair enough.
You want to ask something, Zook?
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to, we don't talk about this player that much for some reason, and not only us, I'm saying even in the league, in the NHL, in the media. Mike Matheson.
Unreal.
Dude, he's a 50-point defenseman.
He's almost a 50-point defenseman
in the league.
Dude, the hating and the bashing needs to stop.
Like, I don't get it.
I don't get it either. What a fucking, the nicest shorthanded goal from any of our defensemen since God knows who on this team.
Dude.
Like, it's enough now. It's done.
Like, I get...
I'm pissed off with Matheson on the blue for, like, I'm just impatient for Lane Hudson to be our power play quarterback. I'm just saying Mike Matheson is not a power play quarterback and he fumbles the fuck all the time.
He's doing something... Okay, like, what's the word? He's... fuck, I want to word it correctly. He's doing things out of his comfort zone, let's say. Mm-hmm. And he still has 50 goddamn points almost and trying his best. Dude, he's playing with what he has, right? Like, we're a decimated team, young and this and that and all that kind of shit. He's trying to do the most that he can. And, you know, he may be doing things where he's not naturally, I would say, suited for. So I get what you're saying, Chris, but you can't bash a guy and say he's shit.
I'm bashing plays of his.
That's going to happen. When you're doing things that are covered, that's what happens.
I love the guy. I think he's, you know, we spent a whole bunch of minutes earlier on in the episode talking about how the culture is developing.
Right.
And I think Mike Matheson is a huge part of that culture. I think
I mentioned that for the defenseman. I did mention that, yes, at the beginning.
Yeah, he's absolutely selfless and he's a great human being. And I love it's just sometimes it's frustrating because I think the frustration comes because he can go down the ice, he can break past the defenseman, and he can do the most incredible shit. And then other moments, he's got you pulling out your hair going like, what the fuck kind of stupid decision is that? That's the frustrating part. Like, he is truly achieving something special. He's got his place on the team. He's got his place in overtime. It's just at moments, I think maybe he grips the stick a little bit too tight. He's not the best at controlling the puck at the line. He makes maybe some questionable decisions, especially defensively. Yeah. He's got a horrible plus minus that showcases.
I don't care
nevertheless,
about that.
Nevertheless,
I don't care about that stat.
Me too.
How many of those minuses came because of goals that happened when they pulled the goalie with less than 2 minutes left and they only lost by like one or two? You know what I mean?
100%. I'm just saying, I love Mike Matheson. If you want, I'll get a I Love Mike Matheson t-shirt for the next podcast episode, just so that we're clear.
But
the guy just sometimes I just would love to know what's going on in his head, because I feel as though there are moments on the ice where, you know, the monkey that's just clapping the cymbals together. Like, I feel as though that sometimes happens to him when he's on the ice.
I think this is the first time in his career where he's had to quarterback a power play.
There you go.
And in Florida, when you're behind Ekblad, Ekblad's a quarterback. In Pittsburgh, it's Letang. This is the first time where he's had to quarterback a power play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's never, I don't think he's ever done that in his NHL career. If he might have been on second pairings. I don't think he ever was a quarterback on the first pairing, to the best of my memory and my knowledge.
So then if that's the case, he's been good, man.
This is the first time in his career where he's the number one. He's the number one defenseman on the team. Again, Letang, number one. Aaron Ekblad in Florida, number one. So it's a big adjustment. It was a big adjustment period for him.
I don't know, man. He's nearing 50 points in 71 games, man. That's pretty good.
I don't agree with some of the plays too. Like, I question sometimes why he doesn't pass it to Slafkovský often on the power play. Maybe it's because he wants to fool the other team because they expect it to come. When you got Caulfield as well, like, I don't know what he's thinking, but like, for some Habs fans to say he's got to go, it's like, no, stop it. He's helping you win games.
I single-handedly think, though, Mike Matheson is the reason why Cole Caulfield is not going to hit 30 goals this year.
No,
He cannot pass to him. He cannot pass to him on the power play for his life.
Because he's on the offense.
Life.
Put Caulfield where Slafkovský is, he's going to give it to him. Hmm.
But it's the one-time shot.
Do you know the angle? When you're a left-handed guy and you want to pass it to a guy on the left, that's a right-handed shot. You know how difficult that is?
Yeah, like, it has to be perfect.
So I understand it's difficult. And I'm not like, I'm Joe Schmo. I'm pro versus Joe right over here. Like, there's no comparison. But I guarantee you, this is fucking pissing me off. I guarantee you, when we're going to have a guy like Lane Hudson, I'm saying like Lane Hudson. Oh, I can't wait for that guy to be here.
We are going
to
have
the day that Lane Hudson steps onto the ice.
Yes.
The second that Lane Hudson steps on the ice to play as the Montreal Canadiens power play quarterback, it doesn't matter if he's fucking left-handed. Whether it be a backhand pass, they're going to be chef's kiss.
Beautiful.
Beautiful tape-to-tape pass. I will put money down on it. Mike Matheson is unable to make a proper backhand pass. And that's why he has to shift his whole body to turn it to make that nice pass to Caulfield. He's incapable of doing it on his backhand, which is much quicker and easier. And when we finally have that guy, think of Cale Makar. Look at Cale Makar on the back end. I'm not comparing freaking Mike Matheson to Cale Makar, but I'm just saying Cale Makar can make a freaking backhand pass to the guy on either side of the ice. And until we have a guy who could properly feed at the same time, either Slafkovský or Cole Caulfield,
Mike Matheson
is just the rent-a player for now.
Again, Mike Matheson, for the first time in his life, he's quarterbacking ever in a season. He's quarterbacking a power play. I think he needs another defenseman to help him out. I know the four forwards and one defenseman. You add in another. What if the pairing is Lane Hudson and Mike Matheson next year? What if? I'm just throwing out there.
The J word. Listen, I've had a tough enough day. Please don't start.
Okay. How about Jacob Fowler here?
That's another J word.
Okay, literally, so that save was.
You know what? You know, yeah. You know what I have playing in my mind every time I hear that name, Jacob Fowler, is that video that the Canadiens organization posted of all the scouts in a room together contemplating who to pick.
Dude, Billy!
Right.
The scout, Billy,
scout was like, Fowler is a goddamn winner. He's never seen a guy consistently be, elite at that level since he was a kid.
Yeah.
Winning everything he wants. Like, mm-hmm. He's driven. That's what I see, and you can see it in the type of saves he does, dude. He's fucking aggressive. He gets to the puck. He,
dude, he wants to eat the puck, basically.
He's so confident.
He dives at it.
This weekend. Like, this weekend, that dive, like you're saying.
Yeah, so. He wants it. And that's something, dude, he's going to be, dude, I cannot wait 3 years, or I would say 3 years he's going to be the Canadiens. Maybe 3 to 4. What do you think, Sam, that he's going to be in the Canadiens?
Dude, 3 years? He's turning 20 years old.
Oh, he's fucking young. So then.
No, but you know, the thing, so. Oh my God! What a save by Dobesh!
Is he turning 20 years old, or is he turning 19? No, he's just got drafted this past year.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. You could be drafted at the age of 19 as well, huh? So
yeah, I'll tell you right now.
He got drafted
2004. So he's 19.
Yeah. So here's my question now, because again, Pierre Maguire stated that if Boston College wins the championship, which they did, they might lose a lot of their players, a lot of the star players, like Will Smith, Cutter Gauthier, I think Ryan Leonard, I think Gabe Perreault. I get a feeling that they're all going to get signed this year by their NHL teams. Hmm. And if that happens, I don't know. I don't know if Fowler's going to do one more year in college or if he's going to get signed. I honestly, he's got the big... Out of between him and Lane Hutson, I'm willing to bet my left nut that Lane Hutson gets signed 1,000%, and they begin the Frozen Four tournament, but the championship Beanpot tournament. Pardon me.
Beanpot.
No. Beanpot is just like the Boston area.
Boston. Oh,
this
the NCAA championship then the NCAA.
Pretty much, yes. So like right now, so like Hockey East Association, Boston College beat, so Jacob Fowler beat Lane Hutson. The Big Ten, that's where Wisconsin is. I think Michigan's in there too. There's a few associations in the NCAA. Every winner goes to this Frozen Four tournament, and then they select another four teams. To like kind of like the runner-ups go there too. So even though Lane Hutson lost the Hockey East Championship, he's still going to this Frozen Four tournament. It's only a one game, like you gotta win. As soon as you lose, it's over. So Joey said this, I think, earlier this week. He's like he selfishly hopes that Lane Hutson loses, because once he does, he's eligible to sign with the Canadians, and he's going to join the Canadians right away. He can't go to the minors. He's going to burn a year off his contract. He's going to join the Canadians. And I have it here. He's supposed to play on the first round is next Thursday, the 28th. It starts. So
tomorrow.
Wait a minute. What are we? Oh my God. You're right. It starts tomorrow. Jeez, Jesus Christ.
Sammy's on vacation with his girlfriend being on vacation. Dude,
I'm in here. I'm already gone. So, like as Habs fans, like, what do we want? Do we want Lane Hutson to win? Do we want Jacob Fowler to win? Like, what's, to me, winning these tournaments is huge for their development, in my opinion.
I think, I'll say this much. I want Jacob Fowler to win more than Lane Hutson.
Okay.
And I know that's going to sound ridiculous, but
you want Lane Jacob playing the Canadians.
Jacob Fowler, going back to the conversation that you guys just said, I want him. Don't lose. I have to win everything. Mm-hmm. And by the time you get to the Montreal Canadiens, apply that same freaking thing. I've won everywhere that I've played. And I'm just going to carry it over right into the NHL. Is it going to happen immediately? Maybe not. But in the eventuality, I will bring my winning ways and my winning habits back, put them into effect, and be parading around the Bell Center ice with a cup over my head.
Who gets number one? Him or Motombo?
Fowler.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, you guys think so? Honestly, okay. There's a let's not go here, but honestly, the way Caden Primo is playing right now, do we want to restart the goalie debate? Because Caden Primo is being fucking
Anthony solid. Anthony and I mentioned it. I think we're gonna have another three goalie carousel going on again in 2 years. this all depends if they re-sign Primo or not. This all depends if they extend Montembeau or not. They're going to have to figure out. What if Jakub Dobiš keeps improving the way he has in Laval?
I'm going to go off on a limb and say the following. I think either Sam Montembeau, we keep talking about Jordan Harris and keep talking about Justin Barron being key trade pieces from the defense. Don't be surprised that when Fowler is ready, I genuinely and wholeheartedly think that we're going to go get something special for one of our two goaltenders. I think honestly, if Primo continues this way and he's not necessarily part of the future plans, or even doesn't matter, even if it's Sam Montembeau, we could get the King's ransom. Like, you think of this year, if we encounter another year where there's a goalie demand, holy crap, like, what can we go get for Sam Montembeau? And I think Sam Montembeau and Caden Primo is going to be like a Swayman and Allmark type of 40-40.
Could be, but the best thing about it is that they're cheap. They don't have expensive contracts. No, I'm talking about Montembeau and Primo. So if you do have to trade one of them, you could trade them for a good price and get maybe something good in return. Like you said, the King ransom. What helps is that they don't have big contracts.
1,000%.
It's definitely a possibility, but man, all that to say is these are the pieces that we, rightfully so, we're so excited about, but it's like you want to see them perform at the highest capabilities, and the fact that they are at least right now in their respective junior seasons, when they're coming up big in big moments, like that transitions into the pro level. They got that. They have it. So this is fucking exciting. Now, I also be paying attention to, and we're going to end this off real soon, I'm going to be paying attention to the OHL and the CHL playoffs, because you got Owen Beck that's participating. You got Florian Jacki, who's really turning heads. You know, like, he scored 30 goals this year. Like, him too, he might join. I have a feeling he might join Laval next year. Back to NCAA, you have Luke Tuck, Lane Hudson's teammate. He's definitely coming into Laval. So it's exciting. Philip Machar is going to come to Laval. I mentioned Owen Beck before. The timeline for all these pieces is aligned. It's all aligned. After next season, I really think we're going to see the team that's meant to take us to the promised land.
Take me there.
That's it, boys.
Go do yourselves a favor. Go look up, I believe it's the 2013 Stanley Cup playoffs. It's playing the Teenage Wasteland. It was the Stanley Cup playoff introduction. And just close your eyes and listen.
Are you kidding me? I listen to that intro every time I prep myself to go to hockey. The best. And they redid it. They reused it for the Toronto Montreal.
Oh, now you ruined it.
Yeah.
Just do yourselves a favor. Dude, go watch that clip and envision the Montreal Canadiens. Like, literally, it's time. Montreal, it's time to start.
It's the best
visualization. It's into one of the reality.
Best Hockey Night in Canada openings for a playoff montage ever. I listen to that one, and I listen to every year when they have the closing montage after the Stanley Cup has been won. I, Chris, I kid you not. I listen to those every day. Every time I have a game, like, to prepare myself, I listen to those. I have full blast. You can ask the girlfriend too. Like, I tell her, don't bother me. I'm in a fucking zone. Okay. I listen to these. I prepare my bag. I put my fucking Quick Feet soles in there, and I'm in the fucking zone. Chris, if we play in a league this summer, like, you have to do that too, eh? I'm just letting you know.
I don't even play, and I close myself off in the bathroom with my headphones and or my office, and I'm just listening to it. And what are you doing in there? I'm watching hockey intros. It's not even believable. It's not even believable, but that's what's going on.
Oh my god. Oh, that's fantastic. I think we could end it on that note. Zook, do you do anything in the bathroom with headphones on and
Yeah, but it can't be spoken about on this platform. No, I'm kidding.
As soon as we log off, you're gonna let us know what you do in the bathroom with headphones on. Cool, nah. Boys. I'm good to end it on this note. I don't know about you guys, but I'm good.
We said it all, boys.
Said it all. Listen, to all our viewers who are new to this podcast or have been with us since day one, thanks for tuning in. Join the conversation. Let us know your thoughts about what we spoke about this episode. Do you think Lane Hudson's going to make the Canadiens next year? David Reinbacher or Mayu? Do you think Fowler's going to join the organization? So many questions asked about this Montreal Canadiens organization and the prospects, but one thing we do know for sure is that the pieces are being put together, and we cannot wait to see the final puzzle. Don't forget, this episode was sponsored by QuickFeet. Again, go on quickfeet.com to get your 10% off for your QuickFeet insoles. Code CurfewBoys10 at QuickFeet, QUUIKFeet.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. Please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. It is growing. We are feeling the love. Please continue to share the love. It is free. Tell your friends about us. Tell your fellow Habs fans about us. We cannot wait to keep growing this Montreal Canadiens community. All our episodes available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. We are on Instagram, and we are definitely on Twitter. I think that's it. Chris?
Happy Easter for everybody this upcoming weekend.
Absolutely. Happy Easter. Go egg hunting. Eat a lot. If you're Italian, we know you're going to eat a lot. I don't know when Greek Easter is, Zouk. I think you might know this because I think you got some Greeks in your family. But like,
I do have, but it's definitely not yet. It's probably in a couple.
Yeah, yeah. So enjoy that too. I know Greek Easter is a fucking blast. Lots
it's in
of
May
food.
Actually this year.
Food at midnight is probably one of the greatest things ever, especially when you're drunk. Guys, thanks so much for doing this. Enjoy the rest of the Laval Rocket game, fighting for their playoff lives. We'll definitely see you next time. The Canadiens will be home Thursday night against John Tortorella and the Philadelphia Flyers, and who knows who he's going to help to scratch that game. Until then, bye now.
Bye now.
Good night. Jeez.